Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is roll in a roll that I'm told. Come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, gnostic, gnostic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the Dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Eitan Mosia and Sam Lane.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. My name is Eitan Mosia. I am joined, as always, by Sam Estompy Lane, except for like the last three episodes. Sam, yep. What's going on?
I'm not dead. I went to Florida, but I'm not dead, so that's a good thing. I've driven over 5,000 miles in a month and 4,000 miles in 10 days. So it's been kind of wild last month or so.
Sam, not dead. Very, very enlightening conversation. We also got some awesome guests in the house. These two lovely ladies are the creators of BallBlast.com, of the Ball Blast podcast, of all things Ball Blast. And I'm sure you already know who I'm going to say before I say it. It's Kate and Michelle Majuk.
We're not dead either.
Well, see, here's the thing is you are a nurse and you are work for the hospital, right?
Recruit for nurses.
So she's like
that one. Sorry, recruit for nurses. So you guys are intelligent. You're like, no, listen to the doctors and nurses. And everybody else is like, oh, no, I can't breathe.
Yeah, the word.
I joke with you guys. I call you the Muck Duck sisters because first and foremost, everybody, and me included, so I'll call myself out here, thought you guys were sisters.
100%.
And like literally everybody thinks that. And then you learn that they are wives. Is that right? Wives. They are married.
Yeah, the plural of wife. And then if you're Ross Tucker, you hear that we're wives and you think we're wives.
Married two brothers.
Brothers.
We're sister wives.
You're both of them combined.
And both of our husbands love football. Like, what are the chances? unraveled live on the air. And I
remember that.
I don't know. Like, he played that back for Michelle like a few months ago. And I was not on that podcast listening to that playback. And I'm so grateful for that. Because I think I would have just buried myself, over the head with the shovel after. Like, no, thank you. I don't want
to. Yeah. So, I mean, the reason I call you Muck Duck is your name is hard to pronounce. And mm-hmm. I know that you are both very big Office fans.
Yes.
So that is one of my favorite quotes by Dwight Schrute. That's why they call it murder, not Muck Duck.
And honestly, it does look similar enough, so
I love having you guys on because you guys are great people. I like you a lot as people, but we disagree so much on fantasy football.
One more time for all of your, I feel like we had a thing. You and Michelle had a thing.
Oh, we absolutely did.
I made him love me last year at the convention. We're fine. It was the
Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen argument, and it was.
And you ended up being dead right, and I was right on Josh Allen.
Oh yeah,
dead wrong on Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm. And I was opposite on that because I maybe a little bit of
you were still better off because Josh Allen wasn't like amazing. Like Lamar Jackson was the MVP amazing of both the NFL and fantasy. So like I really
God, you're annoying.
Yeah, Stephen. You're so annoying.
I get that. I understand.
I mean, every time you don't let him announce that he won the Scott Fishbowl, like for every so often, then he starts to get a little antsy and has to say about himself. It's just one of those things that we kind of have to deal with on the podcast. But ladies and gentlemen, today we are here to discuss all kinds of stuff. The guests that we have on the show have some reputations. And so we're going to be talking about some of the players born out of those reputations. But before we even get to that, we're going to talk about a topic that Stompy and I, at least in the past, have disagreed on. I don't know if he's changed his stripes this year, but we kind of always seem to find ourselves back here. And it's a popular fantasy topic right now. A lot of people are extremely down on Leonard Fournette. Extremely down on Leonard Fournette in a way that I think doesn't really make any kind of sense. I mean, there's a multitude of reasons for that. One of the main reasons for this Leonard debate in the first place is the simple fact that Fournette, by his team, has been the subject of trade talks, that he's been out there and that they've been trying to move this guy off their team. But, I mean, being able to take that at face value and not understand or not think that there might be something kind of adding to that means giving the Jacksonville Jaguars front office a lot of the benefit of the doubt. We've seen great players over the last couple of seasons leave this team and have very, very, very heated and public issues with this team. Jalen Ramsey was one of those. Yannick Ngakoue, that's playing out on Twitter right now. He actually had a whole beef with Tony Khan, which is the co-owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. The NFLPA stated 25% of all the complaints received by the NFLPA from players came from the Jacksonville Jaguars front office. And honestly, I mean, even if you're going to say, okay, well, that's not really why we're fading him because he was on a bad offense. He was on a bad offense last year. If you're going to say you're fading him because of Chris Thompson has himself never secured 70 carries in a year. He's never garnered more than 62 targets in a year. I don't understand, with all of these things combined, why people still continue to fade this guy when the whole reason they faded him last year was because of durability issues. Now into the 2020 season, we're seeing a Leonard Fournette that was healthy pretty much all year. So I don't get it. Maybe you guys can explain it to me. I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to Kate first. Then we can hit up Michelle. Then we can go to Stompy.
All right. I've got a legitimate theory here, and I'm going to bust the theory open and smash it all over the concrete. People don't like Leonard Fournette because you are right there using that narrative that he is the subject of trade talks, that the organization doesn't like him, that they don't like the offense. Well, guess what? If anybody's been paying attention to Leonard Fournette and the Jaguars, they have never liked him. They have not liked Leonard Fournette since he was drafted. The fact that they didn't pick up his option, not shocked, because guess what? They've been beefing literally since he showed up into town. And it doesn't matter because every single year they've utilized him as a workhorse. Great. He's been effective. Like, I think they're not going to take on his fifth year option and, pay that extra money because it does seem like this is a team ready for a rebuild. Why would you extend a guy and pay him all this extra money for another season when that's just putting you one more year behind in your offensive rebuild? I think that this is a team that definitely needs to turn over the leaf here, but you've got him for one more year. This is the year they're going to ride him more than ever. I can't understand the rationale there, but literally I think it's a narrative and the narrative isn't true. Like the narrative's true, but it's been true since he's been drafted. So I'm
totally
all over him.
Kate here. Normally Leonard Fournette would never be one of my start. Like, I'm not looking to draft Leonard Fournette, right, in any given year. But this year, he's going in the late third. Like, there's no reason not to draft Leonard Fournette with his volume. I don't care that the team doesn't like him. And just for 2020, obviously it matters if you're in Dynasty and you're doing, you know, you want to keep him long term. But even in Dynasty, like, his value is so low right now. All he does is produce top 12 seasons. His rookie season, he was top 10. Even last year in the 8 games he played, he was still top 12 in fantasy points per game. Last season, he was the running back 7. Like, all he does is produce. I do think his targets come down a whole ton. I have him getting like 60 something targets, high 60. But all you need is his touchdowns to come back up. He only had 3 rushing touchdowns last year. Get those up to a normal amount, 6, 7. God forbid he has more. Like, he's going to be top 10 again. He's not exciting. He's not a fun person to own. But you know what? If you need a running back, he's going to be just fine. And you get him at a nice price. I don't like his talent, but I like him in fantasy.
I don't like his attitude. He made this one, like, really whiny comment.
You have,
like,
been holding on to this comment.
I know.
Since his rookie season.
I think it was his rookie season, actually. He's like, yeah, I really don't like playing in the cold. And
this bothered her so much because she brings it up 3 years later.
I, like, no, it's, like, stuck in my head because I'm like, dude, that's football. Like, cold is
football. He's like, I don't like playing in the cold, which nobody does.
Nobody
does. He did say, like, he doesn't like playing. That's kind of...
I don't know. It was just a thing for me. It's still a thing for me, apparently. I wouldn't want to get hit in the cold either, but, like, it's football. Like, it's a winter sport. But, like, I feel like I'm the person who loves everybody's sloppy seconds because I've always been out on Fournette at the price. But now that he's dropped to the third round, give me that all day.
Yeah.
I actually – so the reason I was off of him was because where you were getting him earlier in the offseason, I would rather personally have Chris Carson – but now that he's and really, I mean, he was going kind of in the middle of the second, as high as the middle of the second. So there were just guys that I liked better, but like the Majuks stated, he dropped muck to the muck. The Muck Ducks stated he's dropped into the end of the third. And while you could still make arguments that they're going to have to throw a decent amount because that defense is just going to be terrible. And I think Chris Thompson, it's a legitimate concern. I don't know how significant of a concern it is, but we know that Jay Gruden will use Chris Thompson. That's why he brought Chris Thompson in, but you have to trust Chris Thompson too, or at the very least, we know we trust Chris Thompson to sit out 4, 6, 8 games in a season. So yeah, I mean, and even if he drops down to 60 some odd targets, you're still talking about a bell cow back. Like, if you look at the top 10 last year, I think like 50 or more targets basically landed you in the top 10. And that's what Leonard Fournette is going to end up doing again. Because really there's nobody else there. Rykel Armstead's not going to take carries. I don't know who else is even there at this point. Is Alfred Blue still there?
No, but they have that other Ezigbo.
Oh, yeah, the Divine Ezigbo. What was that, 2 years ago that they loved him? Or was it last year? Regardless. So,
I think it was last year, but he's having some hype now. But, yeah, they're not anything.
But, I mean, the point is, and this goes for, like, David Montgomery as well. I don't like David Montgomery, but who's taking touches from him? I mean, Tariq Cohen's going to get his, but David Montgomery's probably still looking at 250 carries and 50 plus targets. I mean, volume is king in fantasy football.
And honestly, like, a guy like David Montgomery is a guy that I'm looking at and I'm like, well, 2019 has to be the floor, right? Yeah. Like, if he gets that volume, that is the floor that we're going to see. Had so much opportunity in the red zone, hardly converted anything. If he continues to get those touches, you're going to see some progression. Mm-hmm. Like, unless he is literally the worst running back in the world. But we've seen LeGarrette Blunt be...
Don't you dare. Don't you dare sully the name of LeGarrette Blunt. That man won me championships, both with Tampa Bay and Patriots.
1 yard touchdowns for the win, man. That's all you need.
Seriously, it's all about the touches. So, like, he's a guy that can do it.
Or you need to just draft running backs in the first and second round.
Yes.
So you don't have to worry about taking Fournette or Montgomery. Just
the first three rounds.
It's entirely possible. But, I mean, I'm always trying to get bargains on running backs. And, I mean, you take 35% of Leonard Fournette's targets away from Leonard Fournette last year, and he's still an RB1. He's still RB12. And that's the type of value that, like, people are totally discounting this season. If you want to talk about the Jaguars' front office, I just mentioned Yannick Ngakoue. I just mentioned Jalen Ramsey. In 2017, they had one of the best defenses in the entire NFL. That was the reason that they got to the heights that they got and lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers, I believe, at the last hurdle. However, of that entire defense, of everyone on that defense, they only offered a contract extension to one person. The Jacksonville Jaguars hate everybody. If they hate Leonard Fournette, it's because they hate everybody too. So if that is where you're cutting your fade Leonard Fournette takes, I don't know what to tell you. But we are now.
What you did there was just make me sad and remind me how the Steelers actually lost to that team in the first round of the playoffs and tore my heart out.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, they lost to the Patriots. They lost to the Patriots that year, yeah. I believe.
Blake Bortles, if they just would have got out of that fourth quarter, he would have been a Super Bowl playing. I don't know if he would have won, but he would have been a quarterback that's played in the Super Bowl.
That's so gross. But I'm just going to say this to, like, close out the Leonard Fournette topic. I am hoping that the front office of the Jaguars just, like, goes to bed every night and they're like, doesn't want to play in the cold, like – and they're holding on to it the same way that I'm holding on to
it. I think that's what it is. However, they are in Jacksonville, so maybe that doesn't make any goddamn sense either, which is kind of the reason for this whole conversation. But
seriously.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of where we're at with Leonard Fournette. But we're going to move on to another guy on that roster, another guy that I think that you guys like as well. I'm very much a fan of Mr. DJ Chark, leading wide receiver for that team, ex-wide receiver for that team, number one wide receiver for that team, and really only has to compete with targets with LaVisca Chenault, who is a rookie in his own right, and has kind of been one of those guys that has had his own share of injury issues throughout his entire collegiate career. I mean, what we've seen out of DJ Chark is kind of incredible. We saw he was top 20 in air yards, but 37th overall in total ADOT, which means to me that this guy can actually be a threat at all levels of the field. He's not just the deep threat that you would pigeonhole him into. He's a guy that can be a very, very successful receiver in the short game as well. In fact, if you look at his success rate over average, you find that DJ Chark was 10% above average in the short middle third area of the field. He was 11% above average in the deep right-hand sideline of the field, meaning that this guy is versatile and he can actually garner targets in pretty much every game situation. We expect this team to be bad. We expect this team to be in a lot of blowout situations. If that's the case, then we're just going to see more and more and more volume in that passing game, and it's a very, very concentrated target tree. For me, DJ Chark is one of those guys that can definitely break out this season. Stompy, I'm going to hand this over to you. Do you agree with that? And then go over to our guest today.
Well, I would argue he already broke out. But, yeah, I mean, I do agree with your assessment of it, because I already mentioned that the detraction for Leonard Fournette is that the Jaguars will be passing more because that defense is not good. And we saw DJ Chark last year be successful. And so if he's getting more targets, being the number one wide receiver there, and how many games did he miss at the end of the season? Like two?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a number one wide receiver on a team that's going to pass a lot. And Gardner Minshew was more than adequate for that team last year. I mean, you have to like DJ Chark this year. It's going to be interesting what LaVisca Chenault, Dede Westbrook, and whomever else is on that wide
Chris
receiver.
Chris Conley, board. Baby.
Huh?
Chris Conley.
That's right. And there, who was the one that everybody was on board with and then just he kind of didn't do anything?
Was that Dede
Westbrook?
No, Cole. 2 years ago.
Oh, Keelan Cole.
Yeah, Keelan Cole. But yeah, so I would expect probably over 600 passing attempts from Gardner Minshew this year, just because they're going to have to pass a ton. So, and DJ Chark, mind you, is going off the board as wide receiver 20, which, I mean, I get why he's going there, but very easily because of the volume, he could be a wide receiver one this year. And the volume overall and just the target concentration, like Eitan said.
Yeah, I don't. I am so on the DJ Chark train. Like, he is my favorite wide receiver this year going in because of his ADP. His ADP makes no sense to me. I actually own him on like every single one of my dynasty teams. He's my most owned player throughout the entire league. I get it. He ended as a wide receiver 17, but that's just you looking at the ending numbers. He got hurt in week 14, even including week 14, weeks 1 through 14, he was the wide receiver 8. So he's already, and when I say I have DJ Chark in my top 10, people think that's a bold statement. Well, he was top 10 last year. He just got hurt in week 15. He tried to play through the injury. Like, his coach said, it's a significant injury. He might not play the rest of the year. He played because he tried to toughen it out. He didn't break another tackle after the injury. He was one of the top players in broken tackles. He was doing fantastic in that. Didn't break another tackle after his injury. So you can tell that the injury bothered him, and he had two terrible games and he missed a game. So he fell all the way down to wide receiver 17, but I'm going to consider his healthy tape and his healthy production, because that's a massive part of the season. 14 weeks, 13 games. That's a huge part of the season. I have him down for 133 targets, almost 1200 yards and 9 touchdowns. He's in my top 10 wide receivers. I love him. I love him so much.
Yeah, and I think we're sort of understating the fact that, like, let's look at, if we liken it to Blake Bortles and Allen Robinson, like, that was a top-tier season from Allen Robinson. It came on the back of garbage time. So if you truly believe that this offense is going to be crap, then that's all the more reason to buy in. And Eitan, you said the point about him being able to make plays, you know, both short and long. It's so good for just consistency purposes, because, you know, you can probably get a nice voluminous game from him. But if you don't, that doesn't mean your chances at a stellar fantasy performance are gone, because he doesn't need a ton of targets.
Play.
Yeah.
He needs one play.
But he can get a ton of targets, if that makes sense.
I just for reference here, The Jaguars threw it 589 times last year to 517 for their opposition. They lost. They now don't have Calais Campbell. They now don't have Yannick Ngakoue. I mean, he's as good as gone. AJ Bouye is gone.
Where he's going, I heard there's like a couple of deals like right now.
Are they
coming in? Oh, never mind.
Yeah. So, and then Jalen Ramsey was there for half the season last season as well. So now imagine kind of. Okay. Yeah, sure.
You're right.
But the front office. Right. But the point being that they've lost they lost their four best defensive players. Maybe you can make, and they lost Telvin Smith as well last year. So this defense is going to be terrible. So they're going to throw a ton. And with DJ Chark, really, I mean, I don't know who else you trust there besides D.D. Westbrook a bit, but with DJ Chark being the most trustworthy wide receiver, I bet you that Gardner Minshew is going to look to him a lot.
And all of camp notes is saying that DJ Chark is by far the best player on the whole offense. Like, he's shining. He's making plays left and right. Like, he looks like he even stepped up from last year. I think he has top five potential. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I have him like right around 10. I do think he has that ability. He's a 6'3", 200 plus 4.33 something. Like, he is an athletic freak. His hands are great. He can catch any ball that's contested, and he can beat anybody deep. And has chance of the catch.
And he's so good. He is a former second round draft pick.
The only reason he's not going as high as the AJ Browns and the DJ Moores is because he did not succeed in the season, and that's the only reason.
Well, and you said 133 targets, 1,200 yards. That's not far off of 140 targets. 140 targets almost guarantees you top five. But if he increases his yards per reception and gets, like you said, maybe 10 to 12 touchdowns, very easy to see that DJ Chark can be a top five wide receiver this season.
Yeah,
it was 14th in deep targets last year. So, you know, he's getting those high value targets as well. I mean, he's getting targets in the end zones. We saw that as well. But, I mean, the simple fact is, I think everybody has said it here, DJ Chark just has so many arrows pointing in the right direction, a limited target tree, a team that is probably going to be bad going forward into the 2020 season. that, I mean, it just doesn't really make sense to kind of discount him. When you look at the fact that he only received 21.8% of the total target share in Jacksonville last year, it's easy to see him even advancing from that point. So if you're just taking rate stats from last year and just saying, okay, in totality, this is what he was, there is real potential that that target share can even be a little bit more concentrated than it was last year, that it can go up from 22% to around 24%, and then we're seeing a whole new world with DJ Chark. So I really do think that there's a lot of value there that people aren't seeing. Now, ladies, we're going to fight. Because I did promise you that we're going to get to a point in this podcast where we were actually going to butt heads on a topic on one of the guys right. that I know
ding, ding, ding.
Super high about. And what is Sam doing? Sam is punching in air for those that are listening.
I don't know
what to do with this man. We've already seen him in his tights. We've already seen him in that athletic gear, and it's already not a pretty picture, so I don't know what to do.
God damn it. Why that was an attack and it wasn't fair.
So we're going to go over to a team that plays in the cold. And we're going to talk about the Buffalo Bills. And, I mean, I have a few things here to say about Devin Singletary. I know you love Zach Moss. I have a few things here to say about Devin Singletary. Devin Singletary was 11th in breakaway run rate last year. He was one of the most explosive runners, even though his athletic profile wouldn't lead you to really believe that he's that type of player. He was third in juke rate. And the Buffalo Bills last year, they were started out being primarily a run-heavy team. As the year kind of moved on, they became more and more pass-heavy, which is where I know you're going to go with Zach Moss. But I also just kind of want to point out that the Buffalo Bills, over the last three games of the 2019 season, upped their pass rate from about 55% to about 62%. So there's definitely a way to go with that. But what I'm saying with that is, if this team is not going to be as run heavy as it was last year, if we've already seen that trend happen, and there's two guys in this backfield, regardless of the one that you choose, is there enough for both of these guys to really eat and really be relevant in the 2020 season?
I actually want to ask first, how much did your heart break when the Bills took Zach Moss when you already have Devin Singletary, your last year's love on that team?
It hurt really hard. Like, I was really, really sad. But now going into the season, I'm really excited about it because I love the Bills. I love watching the Bills. I do. Like, you don't have to talk me into Devin Singletary. Like, we're obsessed with Zach Moss. I know.
Yeah.
We were obsessed with Devin Singletary. We know how good he is on the ground. The reason why we were so sad that the Bills drafted Moss is because we knew it was going to ruin Singletary in fantasy. And that's what broke our heart, not anything to do with Moss. This is a great situation for him. Perfect scheme, good offensive line, a team that likes to run, and then you have a rushing quarterback to give him room to run. Add in Stephon Diggs, there's going to be tons of holes. The issue is that everything Singletary can do on the ground, Moss can do just as well. I'm not even going to say better. I think Singletary's an amazing runner.
But he also has the benefit of having size.
That's what I was going to say. He has a size, so he's going to get all the goal line carries, and he's a much, much better receiver. He was one of the best receivers out of the whole running back group coming out of this year's class and out of, like, the last five classes. I've gone back and I've compared him to other classes. And then Singletary has been by far the worst out of the last five running back classes, like by a massive, massive chunk. He's the worst receiving back to come out of college in efficiency. And then you go to last year and it really translates well. This is why I look at the stat, is if you look at receiving stats, certain ones, they translate really well from college to NFL. Singletary was also like the worst running back in efficiency in the passing game last year. So it's an area he struggles in. He fumbled a lot and he dropped a lot of balls. Like, those are issues. So if I'm going to take a guy, because I think you're right, there's not room in this offense for two guys to succeed in fantasy. But if I'm going to take a shot on one, it's definitely the running back going the 10th, 11th round compared to the 3rd, 4th. And it's definitely the guy that's going to get all of the goal line carries and probably steal the passing work. Because without those two things, you have zero upside in fantasy.
Well, I really try to look at, like, my process, like, I knew Derrick Henry was breaking out last year. Knew it. And you know why? Because I'm really into reading context, right? Like, I feel like even with all the coach speak, we can read between the lines a little bit. When I look back at the way that, you know, the The Titans said they were going to use Derrick Henry prior to the 2018 season. They essentially told us, like, yeah, Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry are like the same person to us. Like, and we didn't believe it. And we drafted Derrick Henry too highly anyway, and we shot ourselves in the foot. So, like, I think we projected this role for Devin Singletary when maybe he's just this really good change of pace guy. And it's not to say he's a bad running back, because I love his style. He's, he runs like the wind. Like, he's aggressive and he's swift at the same time. Like, he makes some really, really nice plays.
All of the news coming out of camp, and you can say whatever you want, but you're not hearing the same stuff about all of the other rookie running backs besides Taylor and maybe Clyde, but Zach Moss is just like the main event at Bills camp. It seems like every day he's the one that reporters are talking about. Today they actually came out and said Singletary really struggled with all of his work. Like, he struggled in every play, and he fumbled at the goal line, and that was an issue he had last year. And every play that Moss had, because they're both in the first team there, Moss was looking amazing, and he was actually gaining yards every play that Singletary wasn't. So Singletary actually got benched for a while in practice today. Like, these are things that they matter a little bit, and Moss is looking fantastic.
Well, I think, like, not just to say, like, but no, you cut me off. I have to finish my thought. If you're looking at what this is what married and podcast looks like. If you look at what the Bills said, like, as they drafted Moss, they literally indicated, like, yeah, we're going to use him in that Frank Gore role, which it doesn't seem like because Frank Gore did nothing with it. But, like, he actually got a pretty significant workload. He got all of the goal line work. Like, they told us exactly how they intend to use Zach Moss. And, like, they're going to do it. Maybe we should just listen, like, when they actually were talking.
So, I mean, I guess then my question is – Josh and I would have to I would have to break it down by game, but Josh Allen ran for 109 attempts. I mean, the concern there is if it is the Frank Gore role. Frank Gore only had 166 carries last season, which I'm not saying that, like, if Zach Moss is more efficient, that's perfectly fine, and I don't know how he's not more efficient than old man Frank Gore.
You did see Frank Gore's role definitely diminish. I mean, he was literally gaining 2 yards, 1.5 yards per carry in games. Like, you can't keep feeding that. So,
hey, yeah, Frank Gore's been doing that for 5 seasons.
You're just sullying these names. But no, yeah, and so I get that. And this isn't really about Singletary. It's about whether Zach Moss will garner enough touches to, and I understand his value's a lot better than Devin Singletary. I mean, he's got good value. I've even picked the guy that argues against Zach Moss has picked him up a few times because of his value. But I mean, do you think Singletary kind of maintains that type of role where maybe he does get 30 to 40 targets? I think it was 115 attempts on the 151 attempts on the ground, or is it more Zach Moss gets like 200 attempts, gets like 60 targets, and Singletary is really just that 30% change of pace guy? And so then what happens with like Josh Allen at the goal line as well?
So I have those are opposite names. I have Zach Moss here with 210 carries. I have Devin Singletary at 175. But I have Moss getting 8 touchdowns compared to Singletary, who's going to have to break off touchdowns. He's not going to get the close carries, but I have him getting 3. And I do have Moss with 7 more targets. I don't have either of them dominating in the receiving game. I have Singletary at 31 targets. I have Moss at 38, both getting 1 receiving touchdown. I mean, I have Moss at running back 29. I think his ceiling is much higher than that, but I'm not – you know, you have to temper expectations from rookies, especially.
I actually have him higher in my rankings than Michelle.
What
is that? Yeah. Is that
erroneous? Erroneous.
I was the original Zach Moss lover.
Stop saying that. We watched him at the same time.
I knew I was in love with him.
He's my boyfriend. Yeah, he's my boyfriend. She was saying that, and we literally fell in love with him at the exact same minute.
I felt it a second earlier.
So yeah, I mean, I definitely get the argument from a value perspective. I'm not in love with Zach Moss just because of athleticism numbers. And I know, I relax, you two. I know you're going to come at me as a groin and hands, whatever. I'm not making that argument. He just, on tape, he looks a lot to me like
Kareem Hunt,
David Montgomery.
Kareem Hunt. That's so
Russell Freeman, Kareem Hunt, all these guys have a lot to say about not liking their athletic profiles. And so
no, that's fine, good. But we've also seen
David Montgomery is still going how many rounds ahead of Zach Moss?
No,
but also David Montgomery's vision is garbage.
Oh, yes,
and Zach Moss is one of the best visions. All like right, that's right, something right. that you can't teach. That's one of the best things coming out of college is if you already have vision.
What were you
and David Montgomery's vision is legit trash. And that's something.
I agree with that. I would say more about the speed of the game than anything. But you're right. I mean, his vision, it definitely makes up for a relative lack of speed. And the other concern is somebody like Rashad Penny, who was extremely productive in college in the Mountain West Conference, came out. And he's had some bad luck with injuries and stuff, but that's another concern is are we looking at Zach Moss as that type of player who produced in the Mountain West Conference a lot, very well, but maybe not be as productive in the NFL. But then you can argue that, well, the offensive line is as good as he had in Utah. So why couldn't he get the holes that, and have that vision to be successful. So,
and then if you're going to diminish Moss by saying he didn't really play in a super competitive division, then I mean, also you have to do the same thing to Antonio Gibson. You have to do the same thing to all of the 50 running backs that came out of Memphis over the past 3 years or so.
Yes.
For running backs playing the ACC, I'm sorry, Syracuse and Louisville are one of the worst defenses ever. Yeah. I already went through and I did the whole thing. I went through every single running back's game and the defensive matchup they had for the run defense that they faced and how much yards they allowed. And yards per carry is what I went off of because yards allowed could look a little bit different. Akers and Moss had the same exact defensive schedule toughness. So I don't know why, you know, it's any different than someone in the ACC.
Cam Akers had a bad offensive line.
It wasn't even about that. But they were right in the middle, Akers and Moss. I'm not saying they had, like, a hard schedule, but they were very neutral. I can't remember who had the easiest. Dobbins had the hardest by far, and he still killed it. So that's good news for him.
Definitely good news.
J.K. Dobbins is my redraft rookie running back this year. Like, I just he's going to be Nick Chubb 2.0 for the Lamar Jackson.
We're actually going to get to the Ravens in just a moment here, but really quickly, we have one more question with the Buffalo Bills. Stephon Diggs has been a very hot point of contention between myself and my co-host in the past. If you've listened to the Dig In episode, my view on Stephon Diggs is Stephon Diggs is a chameleon. Stephon Diggs is the type of dude that can find himself in any given situation and find success in that situation. We saw him in 2018, be one of these guys that was fed just tons and tons and tons of short targets, over 140 of them, with a very, very low A dot, and still got 1,000 yards, still was the Stephon Diggs that we expect him to be. In the next season, in the 2019 season, he got 94 targets. What happened? What was the difference? Well, the difference was most of those targets were downfield. They were very, very deep targets, and he showed that he could excel at that as well. It seems to me that in Buffalo, regardless of what you want to say about John Brown and Cole Beasley, John Brown and Cole Beasley have been asked to do very specific things throughout their entire career. Cole Beasley has been the underneath target. He's always averaged an A dot under double digits, whereas John Brown has always been a deep threat. He's always had an A dot, I think, over 12 yards. I think he might even go out to 14. I just don't want to get quite there without the numbers in front of me, but none of these guys have been asked to do both. Now I think they legitimately have a guy that can do both. So I wanted to ask what your outlook on Stephon Diggs was, and by association, what that outlook for Josh Allen then would be this year in 2020.
You know, I think Stephon Diggs helps the Bills offense more than he does anything for fantasy.
This year.
I think
next year, like this is going to be the 2021 offseason is where I'm going to buy him low.
I don't know. I don't even know if I care to do that because Stephon Diggs is a great talent. We get that. But he's never been good for fantasy. He's been up and down. So some weeks he can help you. Some weeks he can't. He's just totally inconsistent. And he doesn't get the targets he needs, right? Especially last year. He's going to the same exact offense, basically. He's going to an offense that doesn't pass a ton, that's going to run it. And then you're going from a quarterback who's super accurate and has a high completion percentage to a quarterback that's not. I don't understand how this is a good move for him. I get all the camp videos. He's looking good. Like, I get it. He's looking good. I think he's going to be fantastic for that offense. If you're a Buffalo Bills fan, you should be pumped. You have Stephon Diggs on your team. Mm-hmm. But I think all he does is help John Brown get more open, so maybe he can have deeper completions, like passes that way. Cole Beasley will probably get some underneath. He's still not ownable in fantasy. And it'll open up the run game. It will make Josh Allen a better quarterback. But
what would you say, though, to the fact that on the Buffalo Bills themselves last year already shifted towards a more pass-heavy game late in the season? And with the signing of Stephon Diggs, or the trade of Stephon Diggs, they gave up assets and a contract to a guy that they expect to be a big part of that passing game. Is there not enough kind of context to say that this is a team that might just in general be shifting to be a more pass-heavy team?
They could pass more, but they still have a ton of people to target. I mean, they could be a more pass-heavy team and get Diggs involved and then have John Brown and Cole Beasley be a huge part of their offense and then have Dawson Knox and Singletary and Moss all involved in the game. They have a great offense. Like, they really do have great pieces. They're not going to be a 600-pass team. I don't think there's going to be anyone in this offense with 140 targets. Like, I think the ball will be spread around. I think the reason why the Bills spend that is they don't care about fantasy football. They want to make their team better. And Stephon Diggs, not Stephon Team, but we could call him that. Stephon Diggs makes the team better. That's why you go spend money on him and spend draft picks. He makes everyone better. He opens up the entire offense. It doesn't mean he's going to get 140 targets. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see it happening. I think he's still around 110 targets. He's going to have to be as efficient as he was last year on them. And going from Kirk Cousins to Josh Allen, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I think he's going to be an absolute baller in best ball leagues. Like, that's where I want to take Stephon Diggs, because he is the kind of guy that's going to have a monstrous ceiling. And his ceiling is just about as high as Josh Allen's can throw the ball, really. Like, dude's got a rocket ship of an arm.
Let me see how many targets I have for Diggs. I have 114, so I was above my 110. I have him at 114. I have him with just over, I have him around 1050 yards, 6 touchdowns.
20 more targets than last season with 1,000 yards.
The thing is, look at what he did all of his years before that.
Yeah.
He had, 5 more yards per reception than any of his years otherwise? Like, you can't just expect that to be his new norm.
Especially with Josh
again,
Allen.
You're going from Kirk Cousins to Josh Allen. You have to expect his completion percentage to go down if his yards per reception staying that high. If his completion percentage staying the same, you better believe that yards per reception coming way down. So, I think it's totally fair to say more targets, less yards.
I'm going to pass because Michelle said everything that I argued the last time we argued. So I agree. Concur.
We just agreed on something.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe it. And really it comes down to, and Eitan, you have the idea that maybe he'll have deeper, his ADOT will be better.
Not that his ADOT will be better. I'm just saying he can be one of those guys that's effective in every role. So
No. I agree with that. And I don't think any of us disagree that Stephon Diggs is extremely talented. I mean, probably one of the most talented wide receivers in the game, just in terms of how he runs routes and how he produces. Yeah. But unfortunately, he just hasn't been, he's somewhat like Brandon Cooks, where he just hasn't been used as much as he can be, except for the one season. So, I mean, with Josh Allen, like, I think 114 is probably right. I would say between, I agreed more with the 110 targets. But the accuracy of those targets, like, Josh Allen took a gigantic step last year as a passer. I will openly give him that. I mean, his completion
percentage points, something like
yes,
that.
Yes. Yeah. So, but you can't expect that to continue as he just gets more and more wide receivers, right? Like, he's already made the giant jump. 70%. I didn't even know what I would do if he did that. I'd be like, well, I mean, football doesn't make sense.
I have a 9% touchdown rate.
There you go. Oh, there you go. Ugh, God.
He's kidding. I'm kidding. It's a Lamar Jackson.
No, I know it is. Leave me alone. I don't want to defend that anymore. No, just with Josh Allen, though, like, okay, maybe he can get to 60%, but you're not going to get much higher than that because he's already made that leap with better wide receivers. So I don't know how much you can expect to siphon off of both John Brown and Cole Beasley. Dawson Knox is in year two as a tight end. Zach Moss and Devin Singletary are going to get targets. So it's hard for me to think that they throw more than 550 times. They only threw it 513 times last year. And therefore, I don't know if the necessary volume is there for him to be that wide receiver that you think he can be a time.
Yeah, and I will say I have Josh Allen getting a little bit better in the passing game, and I think this would be like where he probably ends for his career of getting better, right? I think this is his third year he can get better, but I have him getting up to 63% completion.
All right.
I think that's fair, like especially with Stephon Diggs. I really do think he opens up things. It's going to be easier passes. I think their running game is going to click a little bit more. It should just be a little bit easier for him to pass the ball into space. But I have Stephon Diggs with 65% completion rate. Like, I wasn't mean to these people. He was at 67, 68, 67 before that. I think it comes down just a little bit. Like, I'm not taking too much away. But I do have him coming back down to 14.7 yards per reception. He was at 18 yards last year. Before that, he was at 10, 13, 10, and 13. So I still have him at his second highest yards per reception in his career. I have him with a decent amount of targets, and he still is just getting 1,080 yards and 6 touchdowns, 74 receptions. That doesn't make him that high of a quarterback. That makes him a very low-tier wide receiver two at best, and he's going to disappoint you most weeks.
I definitely do see where you're coming from. I will die on this hill. I will stay on this hill. I was on the Leonard Fournette hill last year, and that hill got me reborn because everybody discounted him last year. So I'm hoping that Stephon Diggs will do the same for me. I'm just looking at that Buffalo Bills offense, and I just cannot get off the point that I think that they're just going to pass so much more than we expect them to pass this year because they have the weapons to do so and because we've seen that trend.
But they've built around the defense and running the ball, right? I mean, that's generally how they've built that team.
They've built a strong defense, but they've also highly invested in their passing game over the last two seasons.
I understand that, but I mean, what do you expect them to pass at? Like, that
I'm just saying, over the last three games of last season, they were about 62% pass to run ratio in favor of the pass. If you take that out to the farthest point you can take it, which I know is optimistic, but the farthest point you can take it, that's actually the seventh highest in the NFL last season, going up from the seventh lowest in the NFL the times before that. And that was before adding Stephon Diggs. It just looked like this team was trying to have a little bit more offensive consistency and find a little bit more of a way to get points early on teams and then not necessarily have to worry about being in close games.
I will. I mean, so Josh Allen in his game log towards the end of the season, I mean, the maximum he threw was 36. Oh, I guess there's 37 attempts. No, that's in 20. Yes. So, no, that was in week one. I mean, towards the end of the season, you're still got 25, 24. There's a 39, but then you have 25, 26 attempts. So I would say that percentage is a little bit misleading just because of the fact that they didn't have that many offensive plays in the first place.
What I think is
their defense is just so good. Yeah. Why are you going to put it? This is the thing about Josh Allen that makes me mad when people say, oh, he's never had a 300 or a game. The thing is, he doesn't need to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why is the team going to just be like, you know what? We're going to make you throw 40 times a game, even though we're winning every game and we're going to make the playoffs. We're going to make you throw, even though it's probably going to make us not win because it's stupid. Let's run up the clock. Let's play defense. So I think this NFL team is doing everything they need to do. Josh Allen is doing everything he needs to do to win a game. He is a baller. He's a winner. And I don't think he needs to be this electric quarterback right now. Maybe we'll get that out of him, but I think the defense is going to be just as good. And I think the running game got way better because, you know, our love for Moss. I think they could lean on him to win games. I really do think he's that good. So I'm a little bit worried about Josh Allen this year in fantasy. I really am.
I think what they're doing here, like, I'm going to liken it to sort of what the Titans have accomplished. You know, they achieved this great synergy between the run and the pass and the defense. And I think that's exactly what the Bills are trying to accomplish. I think Stephon Diggs adds that extra bit of efficiency and lifts up that pass game just enough to alleviate some of the pressure on the run, which alleviates more pressure on Josh Allen. I think it's going to be this just synergistic relationship.
We turn this pod into a Buffalo pod.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm okay with that. Sometimes we need to talk about these teams.
It's an interesting team this year. It's a very interesting team this
year.
They're
so interesting. And they're fun. Like, they're so fun to watch.
Listen, I think I have a little bit of residual, like, hatred just because of my and your little spat last year, Michelle. But, I mean, I have to admit, Josh Allen, for fantasy purposes, Josh Allen's a fantastic value because if he stays on the field, he's going to get fantasy points. And
I'm not going to have any hatred. I have, like, embraced Lamar Jackson.
He's
my quarterback one this year coming into the season for fantasy. I was all for him winning the MVP. He's even, like, against my Steelers, and I'm able to embrace Lamar Jackson.
I haven't
Patrick Mahomes as a Bronco fan.
I have started to embrace Josh Allen more. I have picked him up a few times this offseason. And listen, respect, 8% is nothing to laugh at in terms of improving as a passer in the NFL in your second year. It's nothing to laugh at.
Yeah.
So, and 63%, like, I would have scoffed at that before last year, but, like, it's one of those things. You got a better wide receiver. You have better pass catchers all around. I mean, you're probably going to see an uptick in improvement. So I can't say that's not out of the realm of possibility.
All right, so let's now move on into the team we were just talking about. We're just talking about Lamar Jackson. We mentioned J.K. Dobbins before. I think the question that everybody wants answered here, and we're going to start with you, Michelle, is how long is Mark Ingram's leash? How long until J.K. Dobbins takes over that role and he's the number one running back in Baltimore? Number one, does it happen? And then when does it happen?
People aren't going to like this answer, especially because Stompy just said that J.K. Dobbins is his guy for redraft. Unless Mark Andrews gets hurt, I don't see an opening for J.K. Dobbins. I know you compared him to Nick Chubb. Mark Ingram is like 10 times the running back that Carlos Hyde is. He really is. And they had to ship Carlos Hyde out of town to get finally Nick Chubb, who is way better at the ball. It's just coaches like to go with vets, especially Greg Roman. I dug into Greg Roman's past. He sticks with his older vets. There was twice that the 49ers drafted a second-round running back when Frank Gore was still in town. Frank Gore was already older. And twice those players did not see the field under Greg Roman with Frank Gore there. And I think Mark Ingram and Frank Gore play in a very similar way. They're both just like tough-nosed guys that are very football smart and know how to play the game. I don't see a reason to replace Mark Ingram. You were so successful with him last year. What more do you want? He averaged 5 yards a carry. He got in the end zone anytime you asked him. He was highly efficient with his receptions. Like, I don't really know what else you want from a running back. I think J.K. Dobbins will look amazing, and he will gain a lot of yards when he touches the ball. I have him under 150 rushes. I think a lot of those come at the end of games when they're successful, kind of like I think he takes over the Gus Edwards role. I have him for a few more targets than Mark Ingram. I'm not expecting much from Dobbins this year, but Dobbins is my second favorite running back coming out of the draft. But I just think we're going to have to wait till 2021. That's all.
By the way, it's not that I think Mark Ingram won't be the starter right away. I mean, I do think Mark Ingram will be fantastic for fantasy football, especially at his value in redraft. But I think, I mean, we see it a lot where rookies start to pick things up right or after the bye week generally. And luckily this year for the Ravens, the bye week is week 8. So that, I mean, I mean, you're right. If Mark Ingram is being productive, there's really no point in replacing him right away, because why not keep your legs, your young guys' legs fresh for the next couple of seasons or a few seasons? But I will say that I still think that his role will be bigger than Gus Edwards. Now, what that means, I don't know. Gus Edwards had 133 attempts last season. I still think that that J.K. Dobbins can break 150 because he's bigger, faster, stronger than Mark Ingram at this point.
Yeah, I don't have any faults with that. Like, I have him at 147. I wouldn't be surprised if he breaks 150. I just think Mark Ingram will stay there. Like, I just brought up Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde, who's been pretty okay in the league, right? He didn't get to play at all. And Frank Gore was 30-something years old when he was drafted in the second round, Carlos Hyde. He didn't get to play at all until Greg Roman and Frank Gore left. LaMichael James was stuck as a second-round running back the entire career of Frank Gore, basically. I just think Greg Roman prefers his old running backs. He had LeSean McCoy in Buffalo. All he's done is work with old vets. He probably feels comfortable with them at this point. You have the Super Bowl-winning team. Yeah. I don't know if you risk it by
– if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, like, I still think Mark Ingram gets his – and the point is, though, we brought up with Josh Allen, is there enough rushing attempts to go on to make everyone successful? The same thing with Lamar Jackson, except he actually has designed runs. Josh Allen doesn't. Like, he just scrambles. So that's not really stealing rushes away from running backs. Lamar Jackson is stealing rushes away. Mark Ingram, as the dominant starter last year, like the pure lead back, Gus Edwards really only got work when they came ahead so far. He only had 203 rushes. So how much is there really to go around? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to bring that up too. The 202 rushes, like, very easily could be an more even split just because of talent. But yes, I agree. I think both are going to get touches. Ingram likely gets more touches, but I think Dobbins will have an impact this season. Like, I Nick Chubb barely saw the field when Carlos Hyde was there. I don't think that's the case here. I think that you will see a few more touches for Dobbins than you had Chubb in the first half of the season in 2018. So, I think we're on the same page. It's just that you are being more cautious about, okay, well, when I'm saying, oh, he's my guy for redraft in 2020, it's because he's going later than guys like Jonathan Taylor, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
If Ingram got hurt before the season, I would draft Dobbins.
That's where I was just going to ask.
I would draft Dobbins in like the early second, late first. Like, he would be
Would he be right behind Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
I would think that you could make an argument for the top three running backs at that point. Who's going first among those?
I
think he could very easily be the top running back in this draft. I mean, that's the separation of talent from the top three. Well, really, the top four to five and then to six, I think, is a fairly large gap. So, but those three, because Swift does have legitimate competition. If Mark Ingram gets hurt, it's going to be a Kareem Hunt like leap in terms of ADP and production. I mean, very easily could get over 1,000 yards and 40 targets.
I thought Jonathan Taylor is the only running back ahead of Dobbins talent wise coming out of the draft. This is before the NFL draft even happened. Yeah. It's Jonathan Taylor pretty significantly for me, and then Dobbins, and I did have Zach Moss right there. I'm so high on Zach Moss. I have him as my third most running back out of this class. And then CEH was my fourth, but since he got drafted by Kansas City, you got to move him up. Yeah, so he's now my two, but I think for redraft, he's one, right? Like, he's got to be the first guy to go.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
See, I think the weird thing about all this, first of all, before I even start, prayers up for Gus Edwards. I loved you, Gus Bus. Your nickname is awesome.
I love Gus too.
It's over now. And then what I was going to go into was both of these things can kind of happen at the same time. You can have Mark Ingram still be the lead back. You can have J.K. Dobbins sprinkle in a little bit, and Mark Ingram can still be not as good as he was last year. I think that's the thing that people aren't really thinking about when they're looking at Mark Ingram. A lot of his receiving work turned into touchdowns, and I mean, I think he had something like 9 touchdowns overall. I think that was receiving. I'm not sure. I don't have it in front of me. But
I think he had like 15 touchdowns. I think he had 5 receiving and 10 on the ground, if I'm correct.
There we go. Okay, so he had 10 on the ground. He had 5 receiving touchdowns. I don't necessarily know if he's going to get the same amount of receiving touchdowns because I think everybody on that team, other than a guy who I'm going to talk about in a second, I think they take a step back just because I don't know if we can expect Lamar Jackson to maintain his touchdown rate. But we have to talk about the elephant in the room. We have to talk about the man who had a nickname before he stepped on an NFL field, Mr. Hollywood Brown. He is the talk of the town right now. People think that Hollywood Brown is going to be one of those breakouts of the season. J.J. Zacharyson's bold takes article recently said that the difference between A.J. and Marquise Brown is variance. That's kind of where we're at with this. Aside from looking at a guy that has the ability to be a true wide receiver one, that has the role of a wide receiver one at wide receiver two, close to wide receiver three prices, I don't think that there's much better you can do than Marquise Brown. Stompy, do you agree with that?
I have a concern about Marquise Brown's hype because I don't know where the volume's coming from. Listen, Lamar Jack. I mean, the Ravens are built around the run. That's we know that they're not going to throw that much. And I'm trying to look at how much Baltimore threw yet last year, 440 times, and that was and Lamar Jackson only threw it 401 times. So it's one of those things where I don't know about volume with that, and I think everybody expects efficiency to drop a bit. Especially on touchdown, there's going to be a touchdown regression because 9% for a guy who doesn't like 9% is just not sustainable except for like the elite of elite passers. And I understand Lamar Jackson is not an elite passer. He's a very good passer. I think that he demonstrated last year, but he's not elite. So you're not going to trust him to get 9%, 7%. Sure. We've seen Russ Wilson survive on 7% for years at this point. But 9% is going to be tough. So there's going to be some regression there. I think they probably do throw a little bit more, but I don't know how much more. I mean, 450, they're still going to have under 500 attempts passing. So my concern is Marquise isn't going to have the volume. Now his yards per reception was 8.2 last year. And I mean, that's kind of astounding when you consider what he is as a wide receiver. You would think he had, that was yards per target. But it's still pretty low. His yards per reception, 12.7. And we expect him to be an over the top deep guy. He will get his chances to make guys miss and get in the open field, but you want more deep balls there. And you could see his efficiency going up a bit, but I mean, how many targets does he need to kind of hit that hype? I think you have to get upwards of 90. Could it happen? Sure. But Mark Andrews is an absolute monster. And I don't see Lamar Jackson going away from Mark Andrews anytime soon. Not to mention Dez Bryant's coming back.
Dez Bryant ain't nothing.
I'm not worried about Dez Bryant. The old man X is
Marquise.
Nope.
Marquise Brown was top 10 in fantasy points per route run last year, and he was also injured. He had a Lisfranc injury the majority of last year. Also, if you look at the Ravens' offense as a whole, you want to talk about efficiency rates not really holding up what Lamar Jackson did through the year last year in terms of touchdown percentage isn't necessarily something that's going to be sticky well. Ravens were also one of the most efficient running teams we've ever seen in the NFL last year. Whether or not we can expect that to be as good as it was last year, I think, is another thing entirely as well. So if you're going to even take away a little bit from the rushing game, then there is a little bit of room for added value to the pass catchers on that team, even if that touchdown rate from Lamar Jackson does come down a bit. Kate or Michelle, you guys have like a direct retort to that?
I think the opportunity is going to be there. Like, I think We've been hearing from Lamar Jackson that he's not going to continue running at the rate that he has. He might still have those designed runs, but if we are of the belief that he's developing as a passer, I think it's only natural that he is going to throw the ball more and rely a little bit less on his legs. Not to say he's going to be a pocket passer by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, Marquise Brown, he led the team in routes run last year. You know, Mark Andrews is clearly like the wide receiver one, but you know, he gained all of his targets being targeted on a very high percentage of his routes. Marquise Brown didn't. Like he ran some routes. He didn't see that high of a target share. And I think that he does have the chance to build on that this season. Mark Andrews does too. Like, I think there's room for both of these guys to grow. I think that we have to expect that Mark Andrews is probably going to run more routes, maybe be targeted at a lower percentage and see that sort of regress back to normal. But I do think we're going to see Marquise Brown on the field more. And I think that is naturally going to provide him opportunity.
I really, really like Hollywood Brown's talent. Now you brought
up. And he put on 20 pounds.
Like, you brought up that. Who was it that was comparing Marquise Brown to AJ Brown's situation?
JJ Zacharyson said that the difference between the two of them is variance.
That I think there's a wild difference between the two, right? In that there's one main difference. It's that AJ Brown's playing with an offense that's low passing, just like the Browns. He's playing with really no other wide receivers, just like Marquise Brown, except AJ Brown has Jonnu Smith. And Hollywood Brown has Mark Andrews. I think that's a massive difference there to look at. Mark Andrews is the focal point of the Ravens offense, and A.J. Brown is the focal point of, and Derrick Henry, of course, but if we're talking about just the passing game, A.J. Brown's the focal point of the Titans offense. So I do think there's a massive difference there. I only have Hollywood Brown down for 98 targets. I really, really love his talent, and I think he can be somebody very special. I think I have him ranked too low. Like, every time I look at him, I start to sweat. I think I'm too low on him. I only have him for 879 yards. I do have him for 8 touchdowns. I think he can totally beat that, but I don't have him even close to A.J. Brown's potential in their comparable offenses unless something were to happen to Mark Andrews.
Sorry, go ahead,
AJ. AJ Brown had a much higher snap share. I think that's one difference here that you can see as well. Because Marquise Brown was injured, he just was used sparingly. But one thing that you mentioned in projecting him for 8 touchdowns is the weird thing about Marquise Brown is you can say whatever you want to say about his height. He was actually targeted in the red zone and in the end zone a lot. He got 20% of his team's end zone targets. This is a guy that is used in that role. And I get what you're saying about him not being the one in the same way that A.J. Brown is a one on his team because of the presence of Mark Andrews. But I would then also point to a team like Kansas City that I know has a lot more pass attempts going around, but it works. And it worked there. Like, we've seen Tyreek Hill be extremely efficient. We've seen that type of deep ball receiver be extremely efficient next to a guy like Travis Kelce, who is the one in that offense. So yeah, I do think that there is something – there's something to say there as well.
They have another 150 targets.
I think we can liken, there's one, you know, I really do think that we can liken maybe Marquise Brown and AJ Brown and the fact that, like, the efficiency of the offense in general benefits their ability to get
both
open.
Teams are very
yeah,
efficient.
So, like, neither of these guys, I think, need a ton of targets to be really efficient. And I think that's a product of their offense. It's a product of having a really strong run game. And I think maybe that's why we can look at Marquise Brown and think we don't need to project him for a ton of targets, because if the offense continues to work the way that it is, he doesn't need it.
How are your guys' projections looking? Because I have Lamar Jackson for 464 passing attempts. And when you split those between everyone in that offense, I'm not even giving people a lot. Like, Miles Boykin is my second most targeted wide receiver. He has 43 targets. And that might sound crazy, but that's kind of what happened last year. It was like Hollywood Brown and then Willie Snead all the way down in the 40s.
Offense lost Hayden Hurst. That accounts for 40 targets.
I have Mark Andrews with 121 targets. I think he is the man in this offense. I don't think it's Hollywood. I love Hollywood. I just...
So let's look at Hollywood's draft cost in fantasy.
It's fair.
He's wide receiver. He right on according to Fantasy Football Calculators, wide receiver 27.
That's ridiculous.
Is he that high?
Yeah.
No, that's pretty high.
No.
Wide receiver 27.
He's where guys like Tyler Lockett were a year ago. Tyler Lockett didn't get all that many targets. Tyler Lockett averaged about 70 targets throughout his career, bumped up to 110, which is, I mean, not unreasonable for a guy like Marquise Brown, even if you were going to give him 100. So there's definitely room to grow, but I can see where you guys are coming with that.
I would say, I mean, 464, I guess, yeah, that seems, I mean, they're gonna throw a little bit more. I still think Lamar Jackson gets over 100 carries, I mean, pretty easily.
Yeah, I have him at 127.
So, yeah, it's just one of those things. And we, I mean, people forget about Miles Boykin. Miles Boykin is an athletic freak who was in a tremendously bad situation at Notre Dame. And he could very easily develop into that wide receiver too for Baltimore. So I think even like A.J. Brown has far less around him than even Marquise Brown does. Because like Michelle said, you have Mark Andrews, but Willie Snead's not. I get it. Willie Snead's not a slouch. They did draft Devin Duvernay, which, I mean, take from that what you will.
I'll take nothing from that.
Okay, that's fine. But and then Miles Boykin, who I think is a very underrated second year wide receiver that you can get really late. I like him. So, I mean, who you have? Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, and then who? For the Titans.
There have been rave reviews about Jonnu Smith for what it's worth in camp.
Yeah, but comparing him to Mark Andrews, it's like.
Yeah, but this time last year, you didn't know Mark Andrews was Mark Andrews, is my point.
I did. I 100% did. He did it in year one.
You didn't know he was like this. You didn't know he was TE4. You thought he had potential. He was one of those late round targets that you went after because of the athleticism, because of the potential target workload in that offense. But you didn't know he was Mark Andrews. Like, he didn't have
he was the only one that was going to catch anything.
We saw Mark Andrews in games dominate the year before, and that's why we were projecting him to keep up with that.
So you had Marquise Brown, who was injured with his foot. And then you had Miles Boykin, who I still like. Willie Snead's not doing much for you. John Brown's gone. Who are you throwing the ball to? Mark Andrews. I knew Eitan. I knew about that offense. You shut your hole, man.
I would like all of the receipts, please. All of them. Send them my way. Anyway,
if anybody has receipts,
you know how I know he doesn't have them? Because he hasn't already shown them to me. That's how I know he doesn't have them. Because he is the person that would have the receipts.
No, I would not. You think I just keep – hey, no, here's the proof. Shut up.
Yes. Yes, I do. I absolutely do after doing a podcast with you for a year and a half. But going on to this, I think that is the end of our discussion today. We're going to get into what this podcast is about, which is the Dynasty Diagnostic itself. We're going to talk about the roster that was sent in this week by – I can't even see it. Who was it?
Oh, I forgot to put it on.
Thank you. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hold on. I got to switch accounts. Sorry. Oh, me. What an idiot. Austin Goodike. At A-Frame 32.
Thank you, Austin Goodike. Go ahead and make sure that you're following him on Twitter. So let's look at the roster that we have here, and it is a – What are the rules? It's 12 team half PPR. Is it super flex?
No, it's not. Yes, it is. Sorry. Yes, it is.
Super flex roster. Okay, so let's go ahead and start where you guys want to start. Kate, Michelle, do you want to start at running back, quarterback, tight end? What do you want to do?
Let's start at running back because I think we're not going to have a lot to talk about. Sorry, bud.
I'm a vomit.
At least he has Bryce Love on his bench. Love that.
Michelle, are you a Bryce Love person?
I'm obsessed.
Oh, my God. We've just agreed twice on this show. It's historic.
Do you have me muted on Twitter or something?
No, I don't. I haven't been.
I tweet about Bryce Love and Zach Moss.
Yeah, I love Bryce Love. I'm with you right there. Actually, I think you and I agreed on this. I actually retweeted you because it was like, what?
Bryce Love. I really like looking at these running backs. So in the starting running back slot, you've got Sony Michel, Lynn Bowden Jr. Yikes. Lynn Bowden Jr. Maybe we can project him into like a Darrington Evans role. Like he's going to be an ancillary person. I think like the best running back on this roster probably is Bryce Love. And that's not good.
Oh my God. As I look at this team, it has to be an orphan because there's no way your team was this bad. And as I look at like all the rookie picks, you have Ayuk, Justin Jefferson, Lynn Bowden. Buddy.
I think he has to probably trade Tyler Boyd and try to get a different running back.
But like, let's look at look at the draft picks.
All those 2021 first the next year are pretty.
That's where all the running backs went, I think.
Yeah, we can see what happened with this roster. There's definitely some tells on this team.
The build.
But yeah, running back.
I would go trade Tyler Boyd for Zach Moss straight up.
Oh, no. Wow. Eitan, no, shush.
I think we're done here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic. We're done. We're done here. I'm getting that one out of the way. No, please do not do that. Do never, ever, ever please trade Tyler Boyd for Zach Moss.
Listen,
until he gets a full role.
Guys, do you want to hear what I was able to accomplish?
Once he gets a full role, you can't trade Tyler Boyd for Zach
Last season, I traded Tyler Boyd for Kenyon Drake in a second-round pick, turned out to be Zach Moss. So I felt pretty good about it.
I actually don't mind that. At all. But yeah, I mean, listen, Lynn Bowden maybe takes the Jalen Richard role next year, but Jalen Richard is still there. Sony Michel, I mean, at this point, Sony Michel's a bust, right? Like, he just has not been good, and Lamar Miller is replaced. They signed Lamar Miller to replace
him. They signed him to put him on the PUP immediately, and they only signed him because they were worried about the health of Sony Michel, so I don't know what is going on out in Belichick.
Like, you have some of my favorite guys on here, Michael Warren. I love Michael Warren. Bryce Love.
Stumpy, we agree again. Michael Warren is my favorite undrafted guy. I thought he would go in the fifth round. I really did.
Yeah. I mean, being that big and that quick, just why? It's Derrick Henry 2.0. What are you doing? But – yeah, I mean, it's very obvious like what you did. You traded away your running backs. You're gearing up for next year, which I don't hate. Honestly, I wouldn't trade Boyd because he's still very young, 25 years old. You have AJ Brown, so you're not trading AJ Brown because you're a rebuilding team. You have a lot of young wide receivers.
I would trade AJ Brown.
I would not right now because
I'm not trading AJ Brown.
No.
I mean, I think you got to keep him as the only reason you would trade him is that you think he's going to.
You want the best return.
Right. So you get the good return and then you can buy him for cheaper or you can trade for cheaper later.
There's no return left. He has all the first.
I'll say about it, you guys started laughing about you don't have to trade Tyler Boyd for Zach Moss straight up, or you don't even have to do it for Zach Moss. But Tyler Boyd was a wide receiver 30 last year in points per game. He had 140-something targets. That's the best he's ever going to get. And he was still just the wide receiver 30 in points per game.
That was on one of the worst offenses that, like, is possible. Offensive line, but with Joe Mixon even having a down year most of the year because of that offense. So if you like Joe Mixon, if you like the other pieces on that team, then
I don't.
You probably have to like him too.
But I will say that when Boyd played with AJ Green in 2018, he was better in points per game than without. Now that's one season. We'll see what happens at that point.
Because Andy Dalton was hurt most of the last 2 years.
Add in T. Higgins, add in AJ Green.
I'm not worried about T. Higgins so much.
I think T. Higgins and AJ Green are the same. Yeah, they play the same position. So I figure they'll be backups for each other. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about happy things. Let's think happy thoughts for one moment here. The wide receiver room, regardless of what we think about Tyler Boyd, we can agree the wide receiver room is actually looking pretty nice on this team. And it is a rebuilding roster. You have all those first-round picks. You're expecting to load up on running backs pretty much as soon as you can. So you can be competitive quickly. But what are the moves that you would make with this wide receiver group to go ahead and maybe shore up some of the other places that you're lacking a little bit on this team? For me, it would be trading A.J. Brown. And I've had this conversation before. It's not because I think A.J. Brown is really an asset you should be looking to trade right now. It's because your team is not near competitive right now. And you're going to get a lot more back for A.J. Brown than you are for any of those other receivers on the roster. So for me, this is one of those things that I would kind of take a hit right now for having many, many assets in the future, even if it's not just picks you're looking to get back, if it's actual players you're looking to get back. Like, I probably think you can get, like, a Josh Jacobs plus right now for A.J. Brown, and that would be something on this roster that I'd be looking to do.
Listen, if you get Josh Jacobs plus, then that's fine, but I don't know if anyone's willing to. Like, people hold on to running backs like no other, especially elite ones like that. A.J. Brown is so young. I mean, he's going to his second year. It doesn't matter if you're rebuilding. You're giving away. Like, I feel like if you're selling A.J. Brown right now, you're basically just selling like a young Julio Jones. I'm not comparing their two playing styles, but I'm saying that's the value you're selling is a young Julio Jones in his career.
Wouldn't you say the same thing about Juju last year, though? I mean, and now, like, because things happen.
Juju, like, he can actually separate and get yards of the thing. His separation is route running. His whole ability as a receiver is better. Juju lived off of those slot. Like, he's a slot receiver. He lived off of Ben fitting the ball into him. I mean, I do like Juju as a talent, but you can see a complete difference in play between A.J. Brown and Juju.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Kate.
No, go ahead. I was going to change the subject. So go ahead.
So, like, I guess the way I see it is the only way you trade away a young wide receiver in a rebuild is if you think that you're going to be able to obtain him later for cheaper. So you actually gain the profit and then you get back the player, because I think that's the only reason you sell him, because really personally for rebuilds, you want to keep, especially in Superflex, you want young quarterbacks, you want young wide receivers, and you want draft picks. So trading away for Josh Jacobs, I don't think he's a Josh Jacobs away from winning this year, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know why you trade for running backs.
I'm all about the young wide receivers. Josh Jacobs was just an example that I threw out of a player instead of a pick that you could potentially get back for A.J. Brown. The only reason I'm saying this is because I do think what you're saying, Stompy, about necessarily being able to get this guy maybe back at a later date for a cheaper cost is something that really you need to think about when you're looking at A.J. Brown because of how efficient he was after the catch last year. Yak is one of those things that isn't super sticky from year to year. A.J. Brown had one of the highest yards per route run that we've seen in the NFL last season. He didn't have a boatload of targets, but he had a boatload of production because he was just super efficient on all those targets. If any of those things come down just a little bit, then maybe a little bit of the shine is worn off from A.J. Brown, and maybe this is a guy that you can acquire later at a cheaper cost than you'd be able to sell him for now. That would be my reasoning to do it, but I do see the other side of it as well.
Get Cortland Sutton. Trade him for Cortland Sutton plus. And then and
see, get him.
Although I don't think you're going to get Cortland Sutton plus.
No. What?
This is a roster I'm looking at, and I actually think it's probably closer to contending than any of us would actually think. Like, Stompy, you said in a rebuild, what do you want? You want young quarterbacks. This guy's got Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray. Say he keeps A.J. Brown. He's got Tyler Boyd, who's a fine asset. Brandon Ayuk, who I think is going to be absolutely monstrous. And, I mean, the hype out of camp is already insane. Justin Jefferson, we all love him. Darius Slayton, we saw him explode. There's a lot of really nice upside pieces. James Washington, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, N'Keal Harry, all of these guys have had the hype, and all of them had bumpy roads. But, like, let's not forget how highly we thought of these guys just 1 year ago. The draft picks, like the 5. Yeah, all of these draft picks, a bunch of second rounders, you can package some of those together with maybe some of these guys, you know, like a N'Keal Harry, package that with a first round pick or something, and you can instantly upgrade some of your depth pieces there. I think this guy's closer to contending than we
would. Oh, you 100%. If you're going to trade those 2021 first, he very easily could be. So, and that makes me question now what the idea was here. Were those already traded for, or did you trade away your running backs? And I'm guessing they were legitimate running backs with how many picks you have. So I guess if you actually look deeper into it, the actual rebuild doesn't make sense from the start. But again, we don't know how this started, if it was an orphan and these picks had already been there or what. But if you want to compete this year, you absolutely can get running backs with those six first round picks and still keep a couple and end up getting somebody like Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence or Trey. And I just forgot his last name.
Trey Lance,
and get another running back like Chuba Hubbard, and you would still be competing because, like Kate said, you have guys that are going to be relatively productive at wide receiver. Like, if I'm really looking at it, this is how – I mean, I wouldn't have A.J. Brown just because he's going way too early, but this is how I would build my team in terms of getting running backs early and – QBs early in super flex, getting somebody like Tyler Boyd, maybe DJ Shark as my wide receiver one and building off of that. So I think you can compete this year if that's your goal, but it seems like your goal was to rebuild. So I guess I don't understand where you exactly stand on this roster.
Yeah, Kate, I 100% agree with what you were saying earlier. I do think that this is a roster that's built and built correctly. The rebuild was kind of the pathway you were going for, you want to acquire the running backs as kind of the last piece of the rebuild because they have the shortest lifespan in terms of their actual value, because all value kind of dips a little bit after that first contract anyway. So if that's what you were going for, then great. But yeah, knowing the context behind if you traded your running backs or what you did to get here would probably be helpful at figuring out that final point. Michelle, I'm going to turn this over to you. Every single week we do this, we go ahead and we take the roster as a whole and we compare it to an automobile. We're in the shop right now. We're in the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center. We're giving this roster a diagnostic itself. What does this baby need?
Are you asking me to compare it to a car?
Yes.
Like five brands of cars. So,
neither do we.
Can I compare it to a Kia? It doesn't look nice on the outside, but it's gonna last for a decent amount of time, and you can have some good usage out of it, and I think sooner or later it'll be good for you, but you're just not gonna like the looks of it right now.
She had a Kia.
I had a Kia. That's the only reason I know. But it does last for a long time.
Hey, that's a perfect analogy. I like it. What about you, Kate?
I'll go with.
I don't think you. Are you gonna say Toyota because it's the other car?
No, I wouldn't.
Jeep.
It doesn't necessarily even have to be a car. It can just be like car terms. Like we need to change, you know, some tires. We need to fix the radiator, whatever you want.
Oh, we definitely need a new engine.
Okay.
Like this is combustible. We need to fix the engine. We need to take this car apart. I think the body of the car is all right, but we need, you know, it's already been gutted. We just need to start to replace the innards. That's a gross word. the innards of the car and just start from scratch. Like this is a high school kid, you know, like fresh out of school who spent like $500 of the money he earned over summer break to buy this piece of crap from the junkyard. And like, oh, you know, like it's an old Caddy, right? Like it's classy. We can make something work with it, but we're going to have to put a lot of love into it.
Yeah. For me, I mean, this is a car that, like you said, it has no engine. So, I mean, it can be whatever you want. It's an Aston Martin DB9. Fine. But without the V8, like somebody just took it out. So the whole soul of what you actually need in there to get this thing to run correctly and to be competitive is something that's missing on that team. But aesthetically, it's pretty nice. You got the wide receivers to last a long time, as you guys mentioned. You got the quarterbacks to do the same thing. So there's definitely a lot to like here, but it's not going anywhere as currently constructed. You're going to have to invest those first round picks to getting an engine, getting a supercharger, maybe getting some NOS, and then we'll find something that we all like at the end of the day. What about you, Sam?
I liked Kate's analogy. It's got good bones. It's got a good structure. The outside looks fine. I mean, you have the start of like a rebuild. Like, you know what you do with your whomever in your life, dad, mom, whomever builds around cars, and you do that with them. So you build the engine, you build all of the drive shaft and drivetrain stuff. So with the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the picks you have, you very, very much have a good structure here where you could start winning even as early as next year, or you could win this year and just trade some of those firsts to get running backs and possibly one more wide receiver that will help you win this year. So you have multiple options on how to build this roster. So that's why it makes it have a good bones, good structure to it.
Love it. That is going to be pretty much the end of our show. But before we go ahead and let you go, dear customer, before we return the keys, Kate, Michelle, can you please share with the good people what you guys got going on this offseason, going into the season, that they should be looking out for?
Absolutely. I'm Kate. You can find me on Twitter at FFBallBlast.
And you can find me, Michelle, at BallBlastM, BallBlastEM.
We just launched BallBlastFootball.com a couple months ago. Just actually merged up with the Red Shirts Dynasty podcast. Super, super excited group of hardworking guys. And we've combined our writing forces. We relaunched our website. We've got a ton of content coming out just at a consistent basis, releasing YouTube videos, projections. We've got the whole nine yards over at ballblastfootball.com. So check it out. We're super excited about the work we're doing and about the writing staff we put together, because they're an eager bunch, and we're looking to provide some good content this year.
We're going to have so much coming out during the season. It's going to be insane. We wrote down our schedule yesterday, and it seems overwhelming.
I want to vomit.
Go over to ballblastfootball.com. You can see it all there. You can see our podcasts, our live streams, our YouTube, our articles. You'll be able to see it all there.
You're muted, Sam.
You're muted, Aton.
No, I'm not. I know how to use the
I enjoy you two immensely. I'm glad that we have an adversarial relationship when it comes to fantasy football, but a friendship outside of football. Thank you guys for coming on. I always enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. It was fun. We'll talk to you again. Bye, guys.
And please go to the Dynasty Diagnostic podcast feed on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and review. It helps the podcast grow, reach more listeners. We have a Patreon and a store, nv.com. All of the details can be found at Dino Diagnostic on Twitter. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with their scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure only the top of the top notch of quality and performance. See you guys in the next episode.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic popped it, now your team is the topic. Aton and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is rolling a roll that I'm told. Comparable to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, Gnostic, Gnostic, Gnostic.